Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information, and I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 3, and Steeler Camp now in full bloom as they get ready, or we get ready, for our first football coming up this weekend. The Steelers, of course, the first exhibition game next week. And Dave, the stuff that comes out this week, really, if you're a fan of the team, no news is good news, because generally the only important or significant news is injury news. And it's the same stuff that we talked about on Monday. But one of the things that we're seeing here early in camp is a lot of the young guys aren't getting reps. Now, not the end of the world. We saw last year both Sean Davis and Artie Burns missed time early in camp. They ended up being big contributors during the course of the season. But these reps, particularly for some of the guys who missed OTA time, which would be James Conner, Senquez Golson, you know, these reps matter for some of these guys in terms of getting into the flow of things. What do you think?
First, let me start off by saying and asking the listeners, how do you do, fellow kids? I say that because I'm starting to try to become more metrosexual what's the other word?
Millennial.
Yeah. I was kidding with some listeners on Twitter last night. You know, I'm trying to use more emojis, and I'm trying to be more hip, David. I think as old as you and I are, I think we need to do a better job of staying in touch with our younger fan base. And Lord knows we have a lot of that. So that was my effort to try to do that. But moving on. The injuries, as you stated, boy, several of the young kids, James Conner, which according to Jerry Dulac, a report on Monday, doesn't think that shoulder injury that he suffered during the first padded practices, he doesn't believe it's that serious. Conner, however, I think has been spotted a couple of days in a sling on his left shoulder. So we'll have to see when he's able to return. Will it be today when the Steelers resume training camp practice after having Tuesday off? We'll see. The other one, as you mentioned, Senquez Golson. Man, that guy, as we mentioned the other day, I think, or at least Alex and I did, that guy has a cloud, you know, like Pigpen walking around. Just can't catch a break right now with that hamstring injury. Dulac, by the way, seems to think that will continue to sideline him a little bit. I think there was a report from Will Graves from the Associated Press this morning on Twitter that stated that Golson watched the walkthrough in the morning but says he doesn't need surgery. So at least there's that. But it doesn't sound like he's going to be on the field anytime soon.
Not needing surgery for a hamstring is, you know, Jesus. I mean, you know, that would be your season's over again type stuff, you know, 2 month type stuff, man. I mean, but it does, like it feels like he might miss most of the preseason again.
Well, we'll wait and see. I mean, hopefully he can get, you know, back on the practice field. Well, let's see. They got a week from Friday is their first preseason game, right? So, I understand a lot of people are ready to run him out of town now. I mean, I get that. And Kevin Colbert during the offseason certainly didn't show a lot of confidence in his ability to, now that he's missed two seasons, to be able to get back out there again. But, I mean, you really do got a feel for the guy. And, of course, if you're a fan of the team, you hate to see a second-round pick just, you know, we never got to see or learn anything about him outside of maybe a few training camp practices. And that's it. This is a kid that you know, stayed relatively or really healthy during his whole college career. And despite his, you know, him being undersized, there was reason to get a little bit excited about him. And I don't know. We'll see what happens moving forward with that. Juju Smith-Schuster, as we reported on the site a few days ago, was back doing some individual stuff with the team on, what was it, Monday, and we'll have to see. It doesn't sound like that ankle injury that he suffered is going to keep him sidelined too much longer. Stephon Tuitt suffered an ankle injury. We'll see what happens with him today. Landry Jones had an abdominal strain, and Ryan Shazier left with heat-related illness, and I believe, you know, outside of a few guys, Vince Williams, a few others that have been missing time. I'll put it to you this way. Compared to the Baltimore Ravens right now, the Steelers are in excellent shape health wise.
Okay, so let's touch on that while it's topical on the Ravens with the things we touched on, a few of the things that happened with them in Monday's podcast. What's your takeaway on this Colin Kaepernick situation with the Ravens?
Man, like my old rest in peace, my old man, he used to always say, David, either crap or get off the pot, you know, do something. I mean,
asking Ray Lewis for advice, who's asking Ray Lewis for advice on anything, let alone, you know, the fact, what do you do? I mean, the fact that that story comes out makes the organization, which I think is one of the best organizations in football. I mean, we've seen what they've done. Ozzie Smith, a really respected guy, John Harbaugh, matches right up with Mike Tomlin in terms of his career record and what they've done as, you know, in general. Obviously, it's been hard times the past couple of years, but I mean, excuse my French, it's a shit show.
Okay, I'll excuse it for sure. And Steve Biscotti even was quoted as saying, asking fans to pray for us. I mean, that's a little over the top, isn't it? You know,
it's just so inappropriate. So inappropriate.
Look, I mean, there's no new news regarding Colin Kaepernick. Either you want the guy and you need the guy. It shouldn't be hard to figure out right now. You know all that you need to know about Ryan Mallett, one would think. And supposedly he didn't have a great practice a few days ago either. And you know, had an outburst on top of it from my understanding here. But either you think Colin Kaepernick can be a better backup option than Ryan Mallett or not, regardless of what Ray Lewis thinks. So the other stuff has been out there for a while with the, you know, the sort of the baggage related to Colin Kaepernick. So what's the holdup at this point? Like I said, there's not like there's anything new related to it. Either sign him or don't. At this point.
Yeah, leaving it out there doesn't make any sense to me.
Look at the guys they've been signing in the meantime, and look at the other guys on the roster. I mean, for Christ's sakes, they have Dustin Vaughn, I think, as the number three right now behind Ryan Mallett. And Dustin Vaughn, if people forgot, was with the Steelers a brief cup of coffee last year. He's trash. You know, they brought in, what, an arena quarterback, and they cut him loose a couple of days later. In a sense, brought in somebody else. I mean, what the heck are you asking Ray Lewis of all people about? To get his opinion. I get it. We saw it with the Steelers and Mike Vick a few years ago. There's going to be pushback whenever you have something, you know, off the field related to dogs or America or something like that. You know, the Steelers got past it. I mean, did I like the Steelers signing Mike Vick? Because of his history being a huge animal supporter that I am, especially dogs? No, I didn't like it. But was I over here burning stuff? No, it's just, you know, you have to compartmentalize.
Compartmentalize, right.
Yeah, such a hard word. especially for me, bless my heart. You have to know that there's going to be some pushback in a situation like that. So, you know, we'll see moving forward with them. That right now, though, it seems like the least of their concerns with all these injuries.
All right, so let's get back now to the Steelers. We spent a lot of time talking about the offensive side of the ball on Monday and where things are going and the whole situation there. Let's go back to, you know, I've been out past couple of days talking to some people about what the expectations are for the Steelers, and I think everybody probably saw by now the USA Today, you know, preseason prediction that the Patriots go 16-0. And it doesn't matter if you're the Steelers, you go 12-4 or you go 15-1. If you got to go through New England and you lose, okay, is the AFC Championship game a good season? Of course, it's a fantastic season. But expectations are always so high in Pittsburgh, and expectations with Ben here on the backside of his career and Martavis back and Le'Veon about the franchise tag, you know, there's not just expectations. There's hope here, and then there's also an understanding that maybe the future isn't going to be quite as bright as the present. So while most teams in the NFL and fan bases would say, you know, give us a championship game and roll the dice from there, that's fantastic. I'm not sure in Pittsburgh that's the case right now. So we talked about, like I said, the offensive side of things. Dave, I got asked twice in the past 48 hours about the Steelers secondary and how schematically we expect them to play in terms of what can they do differently to slow up the Patriots. So let's get into that for a second. You know, there's a lot of conversation in the offseason about, oh, the Steelers are going to play more man-to-man, you know, whatever. And the reality is they're probably not going to play that much more man-to-man. They might play some press. They might play a little more bump on one side with Artie. But do they have the personnel in the secondary to, in your mind, do things differently and match up better than they did, you know, 8 months ago when they played the Patriots?
Well, I think Keith Butler probably said it best in a recent interview with USA Today, saying that hold on, man, I got something here trying to play in the background that's messing me up here. But in so many words, he said, "I learned that we've got to play something else besides zone." Talking about, you know, what happened in that AFC Championship game last year. And, you know, he went on to say that Tom Brady, if you show Tom Brady enough of the same look, whatever it is, he's going to pick it apart. And we saw that with the Falcons last year, right? I mean, in the Super Bowl, the Falcons did a lot of great stuff in that game. But
they did.
But
and they made a couple bad mistakes late.
They did, and you know, you keep playing that kind of that combination coverage there, that pattern matching. You go to the well one too many times with that, and Tom Brady's going to make you pay for it. And so I think you can learn a lot from that game as to what the Falcons did right. But on the flip side, you have to know that you have to have, and Kevin Colbert, I think, said as much in an interview with Madden on Monday, is that you got to be able to throw everything, not just at the Patriots, but at all teams. You got to be able to play man. You got to be able to play zone. You got to be able to play combination there, and you got to be able to play all of it good. But on the flip side of that, and it's something you and I hit on time and time again when we talk with the chicken and the egg when it comes to pass rush and coverage, man, you absolutely have to get consistent pass rush, you know, from your front four, and your ability to be able to get pressure consistently with just four men is one of the biggest things. And I think the Falcons kind of showed this at points last year in that Super Bowl. Consistent pressure with four, get Tom Brady or whoever quarterback moved off their spot, and getting to get the ball either out quickly or forced into an area of the field that he doesn't want it. Because in today's NFL, man, these quarterbacks just seem to be getting rid of the ball quicker and quicker, right? You know, under 2 point.
Yeah, 2.5, and which is unbelievable.
Right. You know, so how good, you know, in situations like that, your coverage sure has to be tight and good. And the windows, especially in zone, need to be smaller because of, you know, I mean, the balls, how quick can a guy, you know, yeah, you're going to have opportunities throughout a game where you're going to have one of your front four guys get a clean win right off the line. and maybe get pressure under 2.5 seconds. But how realistically, how many times does that happen throughout an NFL game? You know, so I think it all continues to go back to getting consistent pressure on the quarterback. And then, of course, on the back end, the fact that you have to mix up your coverages. And, you know, it's going to be one of the fun things related to the Steelers this year. I guess back to your original question, I think they do have the personnel, David, in the back end. However, you need more out of that front four this year.
Exactly the conversation that I had in terms of I was doing a hit on Maine radio yesterday, and that was the conversation of, well, okay, are you going to be able to get pressure on the quarterback? Because if you had to pick what you want to do, you want to have great cover guys on the backside who can cover for 5 seconds, or you want to have Bud Dupree and T.J. Watt and James Harrison and Cam and Stephon getting after Tom Brady or whomever it is, and getting there in 2.5 seconds. Well, of course, you're taking the latter and saying, I don't care who we have in the back. If you have a choice, give me guys who are every down or every passing down are getting there, and then it makes a difference. I think the frustration with Steeler fans has always been that with no matter who they had in the pressure standpoint, is Brady standing back there for 2.5, 3 seconds. And the Steelers, again, as we've talked about for 8 years and 3 episodes, are playing 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. And guys like Edelman or Welker or whomever it is are just running these routes where they're untouched, clean routes, breaking routes, and turn and they get hit. Or you blow a coverage like you did on the season opener 2 years ago with Gronk, or last year with Hogan. And, you know, you get a guy standing 30 yards, you know, in the end zone all by himself, and it's an obvious touchdown. So if you have those two things, you're screwed no matter what you do. But, yeah, I'm with you. If Dupree and Watt eventually are getting after the quarterback on a consistent basis, they've got, you know, they can do some different things on the back end, even though the personnel isn't going to be different than last year. You've got you hope that the second lap around the track, as Mike always says, Artie and Sean Davis are taking a big step forward. Cockrell's a capable guy, and then we'll figure out who's playing in the slot and somebody who can and do good things. But, man, we're sitting here, and it's the things that I had to talk about. It's the things that we think about. We're sitting here on literally August 2 and thinking about the AFC Championship game and thinking about where the Steelers are, which is really good, really, well, get way too in front of ourselves. But again, it just feels like, you know, the Patriots are still the class of the league. And when you got a team like that is a step ahead of everybody, I know why we get asked the question.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this year, you know, I'd like to see on first downs them play more up on the line of scrimmage more and dare teams to run against them, because that obviously, I think, plays in their wheelhouse with Ryan Shazier and Vince Williams in the middle there. And, of course, we hope to have a healthy defensive line with Cameron Hayward back and, of course, Javon Hargrave and Stephon Tuitt there. Just don't give them that easy first down throw that nets offenses 5, 6, 7 yards. Going back to what Dick LeBeau always, the way he ran his defense and predictability and getting opposing offenses in situations where you feel comfortable being able to send that fire zone if you want, or third and seven makes it a lot tougher on offenses to, you know, beat, you know, zone type coverages in those situations. So really would like to see the defense overall win more on first down, or more than anything, at least try to make offenses a little bit more one-dimensional, because this is a passing league in these days, and teams just don't come out and run on first down, you know, all the time. So, you know, that's one area right there. So I think they have the personnel to do this. I mean, go back and Now, obviously, the league has changed quite a bit since the Steelers last won a Super Bowl in 2008. You know, you just can't throw out your base defense out there, play zone, shut down the run, and then go from there. I mean, it's obviously changed a lot, you know, over the course of nearly 10 years here now. So, a lot of pressure, I think, on Keith Butler and a lot of these young players as well, too. I mean, a guy like Bud Dupree, it's time for Bud Dupree to show that he can be, you know, maybe not a premier pass rusher, but a top third in the league, a guy that more than anything just want to see more consistent pressure, get him to get these quarterbacks to move off the spot. And then, of course, you go out and spend a first-round draft pick on T.J. Watt, and like it or not, he's going to play early. And, of course, you have James Harrison on that side as well, too. So pressure solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, two things. Okay, so one, you know, I think Bud was very good from what we saw last year in the limited time that he got. I think he came in and made an impact and made the defense better. So, you know, if he does take another step forward, big positive. Let me ask you, getting back to the personnel in the secondary, we know who the base defense, which isn't really the base defense. We know who the four guys are who are going to be lining up to start the season. Cam Sutton's injured, not going to get a lot of reps here. It looks like early in camp, he's not going to be the opening day slot corner. Are we defaulting to William Gay? Or I don't want to say it negatively. You know that. I've asked the question about whether William Gay would be on the 53 to open the season. Is William Gay going to be a guy who, at least at the beginning of the season, is on the field a lot of the time?
I think so, David. I really think so. It's going to take Cameron Sutton. You know, Kevin Colbert was asked, and it shouldn't be a surprise what he said during a Monday interview, but he says William Gay's there for the slot, but we also have a few young guys if we can find out what they're capable of.
Both of them not on the field.
Right. We'll see. But right now, a couple of them are slowed by injury, and that's Cam Sutton and Cinquez Golson, and that will push us behind a little bit. But a guy like Cody Sensabaugh, who we brought over as an unrestricted free agent, will also be able to provide some competition. Now, judging by what Alex Cazorra has observed so far, Cody Sensabaugh isn't getting much work, if any, in the slot. That had been primarily Cam Sutton and Cinquez Golson behind, obviously, William Gay. It's hard to imagine William Gay doesn't open up the season as a starting slot. And then at that point, I think you, and depending on how the defense is playing, you know, you try to obviously try to get Cam Sutton on the field. Now, can you get Cam Sutton in as part of a, you know, an even extra defensive back in sort of a dime or penny or something like that? You know, that'll be interesting to watch for as well. And who do you pull off in a situation like that? Because obviously a nickel is probably going to result in a guy like maybe, who knows? You know, well, obviously your nose tackle, Javon Hargrave, might be off. But who's going to come off if you bring in that extra defensive back?
Right. Is Vince Williams going to be on the field is the question.
Right. And, you know, it would be great if in, you know, second and seven and third and sixth type situations, we see some situations where the Steelers have their two safeties and then, you know, Artie Burns, Ross Cockrell, William Gay, and perhaps even Cam Sutton on the field. I think that's something to maybe hope and look for.
All right. So when you think about the Steelers defense, we talked about depth at inside linebacker. I know not everybody's a Ross Cockrell fan, and if you're going to look at starters on the defense, I think if you follow this team closely and you're a football fan, you look at nine guys on this defense starting 11. You know, assuming you're playing a 3-4 with Hargrave on the field, and you got to feel good about. I think you have to feel good about nine of the guys. So you're looking at Vince Williams and Ross Cockrell and saying, okay, those are the two guys. That, you know, you got the other nine guys. And if let's say, you know, T.J. Watt's starting on the one side, you got Bud on the other side, two first-round picks. Shazier, I say all the time, potential defensive player of the year. You got You got a first, second, and third round pick on your defensive front. You got Mitchell as the undrafted free agent, or excuse me, the free agent signing. You got a first and second with Sean Davis and Artie Burns. I mean, you got high pedigree guys there. What's your level of concern about Vince Williams and Ross Cockrell not letting this defense be potentially a top 10 defense in the NFL? Are you worried about either of those two guys not being able to do the job?
The thing I worry about with Vince the most is him just running with players. I mean, he obviously can drop. I think he can do a lot of the things that Lawrence Timmons did as far as zone drops and all. What I worry about the most with Vince is him being able to gain depth in, say, some of those cover two situations where normally you have your one of your inside linebackers trying to cover, you know, get down the middle deep third of the field. Now,
which brings us back to the question of three years ago. It's still stunning to me, and I don't know the answer why or whatever, that they had Sean Spence and Vince Williams playing the opposite of what you and I would have done. You know, Sean Spence playing the running downs early and Vince Williams coming in on the passing downs. Now, never understood the reason for that.
Well, in short, here's the thing. If the Steelers defense, you know, doesn't improve in 2017, we're not going to be able to circle Vince Williams as a reason for that. Fair enough?
I agree. It's right. It's always going to. It's hard to circle one guy, and you're never going to circle an inside linebacker.
I agree. So, I'm comfortable with Vince in there. I just don't want to see situations where he's having to run. Run with people. I mean, Vince is obviously better at playing downhill. You know, type player, and especially against the run, I don't really have any concerns about that. And you know, Alex Cazores broke down Vince in coverage last year, and he did some good things. So maybe I'm over the top a little bit with my concern with Vince Williams in coverage. You know, the biggest thing, like I said, just worry about him being singled up too many times. But once again, If this defense does not take a step forward, we're not going to be able to say, well, man, if only we would have had Dante Hightower in there, or if only we would have re-signed Lawrence Timmons. That's probably not going to be the narrative. The biggest thing I think where the Steelers defense will be more vulnerable this year than years past is deep passing plays, explosive plays, in general in the passing game. And that might be because of these corners being singled up a little bit more on the outside, combined with the fact that the pass rush is not doing what they're supposed to do, and you're having to send more than four guys in order to get a consistent pass rush. So I've come down a little bit on my negativity on Vince Williams, and once again, if this defense doesn't take a step forward, I'm not going to be one saying, well, you know, Vince Williams is the main reason because of that.
Okay, and your view, is Cockrell going to be the starter in game 16?
Oh, wow. Man, I don't have any reason to think he won't be. David, to be honest with you, here's what I want to see as well too. I'd like to see, you know, we've seen a lot or heard a lot about Artie Burns following Antonio Brown around during training camp and all. And maybe we can get away from left and right outside cornerbacks this year. Maybe instead have Artie Burns follow your most, you know, athletic, speediest.
Do you expect that to happen?
I think we'll see it more this year, David, because
you do. You do. You think when they play, I'm just trying to think, they play.
Well, look at Cincinnati. To be honest with you, I have no problem. And Ross Cockrell has said this in past interviews, and I think this whole truth holds true. I think he plays better against bigger, more physical, less shiftier.
Less quick speed guys.
Right. And, you know, say what you will, but I thought he matched up well against A.J. Green.
He did.
Last year. And, you know, I think he's a guy that, I mean, look, Dez Bryant is obviously one of the better and Julio Jones are one of the better receivers in the league. I mean, at times, is it really going to matter who you have on those type of guys? But, you know, in some of these offenses where you have a discernible difference in, you know, a bigger physical wide receiver who really is not as super twitchy, maybe a guy like, you know, Ross Cockrell, even though he's not overly physical himself, it does have a decent history against lining up against such type players. Whereas Artie Burns, you know, you can make arguments on the other side as well, too, being as how Artie is so long, you know, that maybe he's better suited to go against the Dez Bryants and the Julio Jones. So do I expect Artie Burns to play in, play out, follow, you know, to switch sides? No, but I think we'll see a little bit more, perhaps, of you know, a less, you know, you stay on that side, Cockrell stays on the other side. Now, how much, I don't know, but perhaps more than maybe last year.
All right, we got some news this week in the past couple of days since we talked on Monday. One was the Villanueva contract, and I'll pat myself on the back. Both of us on the back for almost nailing this to the dollar. I had a couple, you know, whatever you want to call them, not heated debates, but long conversations with guys who are capologists, who are supposed to, you know this stuff inside and out. And I had said what I expect for Villanueva to sign is four years and $22 million. And one of the guys I was talking with said 5 years, $40 million. And as we discussed on Monday, I mean, the reason that never made any sense to me is you're completely discounting his max earning power, the limited max earning power he has over the next 2 years of his contract, and the fact that he's 27 years old. So, you know, this isn't a guy who's just finishing his rookie deal. It's not the same situation as a guy just finishing his rookie deal as a, you know, third round pick. That's not what Villanueva's situation is. So he comes in with this 4 year, $24 million deal at the end of the day. The numbers came out, Dave. This is I look at it, and we talked a little bit about it on Monday. I look at it as a great deal for both sides. Now, again, it's the contracts in the NFL, so there's not a ton of guaranteed money, but it's Ali Villanueva, a guy who is dedicated to his craft. He's shown that he can learn something completely new. The fact that he's an Army Ranger, I mean, you put that on the scale of things, that is a big deal. He's going to CMU. He's getting a business degree. This is, if he completes this degree, if he completes this contract while he's going out and getting his degree, I mean, this is maybe not generational changing money for the generation after his kids, but this is your life is set. I think if you go out, he's made the money he's made, so he's obviously living comfortably in terms of the money he's made the past couple of years. But he's set for life if he finishes this contract at age 31, right?
Well, yeah. Look, we broke it down, you know, not only Monday, but you know, throughout the offseason, saying what is Villanueva's maximum earning power due to his accrued years over the course of the next 2 years. And if he hits, you know, assuming he played on just the exclusive rights tender this year, and let's say that he got a first round restricted tender next offseason, and let's say he hit maximum NFLPA performance bonuses and everything that goes along with that, it was roughly around $6 million. Well, the Steelers gave him a $6.5 million signing bonus as part of this new deal. So that already, that payment just to sign the contract earns him more than he would have potentially earned over the course of the next 2 years without even playing down there.
So, right, that's in his bank account.
Right, and then when you figure that let's face it, he's going to earn that $1.5 million base salary this year, so now he's up to $8 million earned in 2017. This new contract also reportedly has a $3 million roster bonus in 2018, which one would figure likely
pretty damn close to guaranteed.
Right, and even with that, I didn't get this clarified with Joel Corey, but one would think that's going to be due to him probably by the fifth day of the 2018 league year, you know, this next March. So
he's going to have it. He's going to have it by April 1st.
Right. So that's $11 million with, you know, before the year's up. So $11 million versus the $615,000 that he stood to earn. Heck yeah, that's a good deal for him, considering the rock in the hard place he was caught in because of his accrued seasons in the year. I mean, so far during his career. So yeah, it's a great deal for him, and really it's a great deal for the Steelers as well too, because theoretically, if need be, if Villanueva falls flat on his face this year, and let's say, you know, God forbid, suffers a career threatening injury, they can still cut him, David, before they pay him that $3 million roster bonus and get out of this with minimal damage when it comes to dead cap money. Now, obviously, nobody thinks that's going to happen, but let's say at least you get the next two. You know, look, we expect Villanueva to play at least through the 2018 season. At that point, you know, you can look and see how his performance is, and if you needed to cut him at that point, you would probably make him a post June 1st cut. And then once again, you're out of it with $1.625 million in dead money in 2019 and another $1.625 million in dead money in 2020. Obviously, if I were a betting man, I'd bet Villanueva plays out this entire contract. But, you know, injuries happen and father time happens, you know, along with it.
Yeah. So, to me, this was kind of a no-brainer for both sides. Again, it sets him up for life. Steelers get, you know, their fifth of five offensive linemen signed up for an extended period of time. They've got a guy, you know, kind of waiting in the wings as a fourth-round pick who they apparently like, and we'll see if he develops. They've got depth on the offensive line. This is, you know, we talked about it again on Monday. The deepest position and the weakest position on the Steelers team as a whole are standing next to each other in the offensive line and the tight end. But man, the offensive line situation is fantastic. And I'll be shocked if at the end of the year, when we're talking about offensive lines and talking about the Raiders and the Cowboys, if it's not Raiders, Cowboys, and Steelers, and maybe the Steelers on top of that list of best offensive lines in football.
Boy, if they can keep this group together and they keep playing the way they played, especially last year, and one would think Villanueva is only going to get better, even if Ramon Foster only plays, let's say, one or two more years, you have to like what you saw out of B.J. Finney last year in the three games that he started at left guard. And we don't even know what we have in Gerald Hawkins yet, and perhaps we won't even know for several more seasons if things go like many of us hope they will on that. Is Ben Roethlisberger the biggest question mark right now on the Steelers offense heading into 2017?
Well, I think Le'Veon Bell's probably the bigger question mark. But, yeah, it's as we said on Monday, those two guys are, when you think about the next 2 years, for sure, they're the question.
You know, there should be no excuses. I mean, offensively speaking, I mean, this team should
put 30 points a game. 30 points a game. Let's put it down. 480 points.
Boy, if they don't, they better average 29.6.
This is the year, it really is, when we talk about, you know, scoring 500 points offensively, which hadn't been done very many times, but it's been done, that, you know, the Steelers put up 500 points. I think you can tattoo 12 wins on your skin, and maybe it's 14.
You know, one thing you and I really haven't done, David, I don't think this offseason, is really take a harder look at this 2017 schedule. You open up against the Cleveland Browns. I mean, what do we expect to happen there, even though it's on the road?
Look, the Browns are going to win 4 to 6 games, and the Steelers have lost games to teams that probably are worse than this year's Browns team. But this is, you know, there's an advantage here in catching them early as opposed to catching them twice in the last 4 weeks. Catching them early is a big advantage.
What do you think about the Minnesota Vikings in week two at home?
I've underrated the Vikings over the past couple of years. Don't think they're as good as they have ended up being. They still don't impress me that much, but I got to say, I haven't sat down and looked much about it. But again, Steelers playing their home opener, even though a few years back they lost that home opener to the to the Texans or the Titans. Which one was it?
The one that Pouncey was injured in was 2013.
Yeah. I mean, you get the Vikings and you get the Bears back to back there in 2 and 3. Those are games, obviously, they should look. I think we mentioned the fact that they're favored in every game, except I think even technically they're favored in that in the game they play against the Patriots at home in week 13 or 14. I mean, they're favored in every game they play.
Yeah, I think when that early game by game lines came out, I think the Patriots were favored over the Steelers still in that week 15 matchup. But Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago, Baltimore. Baltimore still should have a decent defense, but I mean, how concerned are we about their offense right now?
I doing this interview on radio talking about the division, I said Cleveland 46 wins, the Ravens 6-8 wins. The Bengals, I don't think the Bengals are going to win 11 games. Maybe if everything goes their way, they could win 10, but I think they're a 7-9 win team. This is a weak division. I think it's a weak division. The Steelers, this is the easiest road it should be for the Steelers just in terms of evaluating the other three teams, as I think it's been in a long time.
All right, with this first 8 games then, Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago, Baltimore, Jacksonville, Kansas City, Cincinnati, and Detroit, and 5 of those games are on the road. The home games against Bengals, Jacksonville, Minnesota. Did I do that? 5. Yeah, 5 road games, 3 home games. What record are you disappointed with the Steelers heading into their bye week with 8 games?
Terribly disappointed at 5-3. I think you accept 6-2. My expectation is 7-1. I mean, Kansas City's on the road. Yeah, so let's chalk that one up as a loss
against Alex Smith. I mean, look, I know that's an extremely tough place to play, but.
Like I said, they're going to be favored in every game. I don't know, you know, when it comes down to it, whether they'll be favored in that one, but I'd be disappointed if they're not. I'd be terribly disappointed if they're 5-3. My expectation is they go 7-1. Hey, look, they went into Philadelphia last year in week 3 and played as bad a football game as you can possibly play against a rookie quarterback and whatever. I mean, you know, it happens. So I'm just going to assume somewhere along the way it's going to happen. They play a miserable game.
Is it unacceptable still if they go 5-3 but won all 3 division games?
They can go 5-3 and win the division comfortably. But, I don't think that's what you're – is it unacceptable? Well, whatever. I mean, that's a best-case 5-3 scenario, but I think you'd still hope for better.
Yeah, I'm really. I mean, when you look at this thing right now, and you know, 4 practices into training camp, I'm hoping for 7-1, for sure. Six and two, I think would be fine as well too, as long as you know, let's say one of those losses don't come against Baltimore or Cincinnati. I that would be fine in my eyes. The back end of the schedule, obviously, a little bit tougher. The Colts, the Titans, the Packers, the Bengals, the Ravens, the Patriots, the Texans, and you end things with the Cleveland Browns. What are you thinking about the second half of that season?
Well, I think the 2 wild cards in the AFC, the Steelers are getting them both there in the back half. I think the 2 biggest wild cards in the AFC are the Titans and the Texans. The Texans having the best defense in the league last year without J.J. Watt and getting Watt back, okay, that's a huge deal. And we've heard all the platitudes about Deshaun Watson and how he looks in camp, and Bill O'Brien kind of gushing about how he's as far ahead as any rookie he's ever seen. Okay, blah, blah, you know, whatever. They didn't have a good quarterback last year. They made the playoffs. So they're a wild card. I think Marcus Mariota is a – underrated, very underrated, maybe in the national perspective, quarterback. I think both he and Jameis Winston are really, really good quarterbacks. But for whatever reason, I think the public is much more aware of Winston's athletic ability and less so of Mariota. I think Mariota is going to be clearly a top 10 quarterback in the league this year. We know what kind of offensive line what they had with the rookie tackles and the running game they had. They added some weapons there. So those two teams, I think, are worry me more than a team like the Colts or a team like even the Raiders. I think the upside for those two teams is very high.
How many wins do they need to have the number one seed? 13?
13 at least.
Yeah.
They're not doing it with 11.
Right. I agree. You know, the game against the Packers obviously is scary. Would you rather play the Patriots in the first half of the season or late in the second half of the season like they're
doing? That's a good question. I don't know who gets the bigger advantage. I mean, if you think the other coaching staff is – you know, the best in football, which I do. Playing them late maybe is a little bit of a disadvantage. But if both, you know, there's a chance that game doesn't mean anything. And if both teams have things wrapped up, maybe you kind of play it closer to the vest than you would if it's a week 10 game or a week 6 game. So, you know, look, but they're both excellent staffs. They both know what they're doing. You know, but maybe. You know, it would be very interesting if, you know, the Patriots have a one-game lead on the Steelers going into that week, and it's a game in Pittsburgh, and you get a chance to play them and beat them and get a home field advantage. Well, then, you know, you pull out all the stops because there's a chance that's the case. So that's what I think probably will potentially make that matchup fascinating.
Well, here's the thing. Regardless, I mean, that's, you know, number one seed's still going to be in play, we hope. And one would, you know, when it comes to the Steelers at that point, week 15, and one would think, barring some catastrophe, that the Patriots will still, you know, they'll be a, you know, 13-2 team or, you know, 12-3 at that point as well, too. So it's going to be a meaningful game, I think, for sure. Now, if it was a couple weeks later, obviously, you know, it still would at that point, I think. But here's the thing. I mean, how nice would it be to have that Week 16 Christmas game and Week 17 game against the Browns mean absolutely nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Which is unlikely. You know, obviously Week 17 probably a better chance of that. Having to travel to Houston on Christmas, what a drag.
That game is, you know, that game could also have big ramifications, you know, 2 seed, 3 seed, something like that. The Steelers are going to be playing for a home field advantage in the second round, you know, in the divisional round.
All right. We still got several weeks to go before we have to give our final record prediction, which mine will probably be 10-6 or 11-5. But I'll go out on a limb and say 12-4 right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think I said that Monday or sometime recently. 12-4 for sure. I like it.
Number 2 seed?
Number 2 seed. Yeah, behind the Patriots.
Okay. All right. That's good. All right. Where to now?
I don't know. We got anything else or save a little for Friday? I think we covered most of what went on.
Yeah, that sounds good then. And Alex Cazorla will join me later on this evening to recap what he observed out there at St. Vincent College in La Trobe for Wednesday's practice there. David Todd and I will be back on Friday I guess we'll be previewing the Steelers' first preseason game then, right? No, I'm sorry. That's a week after. We'll be previewing.
Yeah, no, we got a lot of time to kill.
Yeah, we'll be previewing Friday Night Lights. I'm sorry. The Friday night practice will be taking place this Friday. So, we'll I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about by then. Okay. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Let me know, if I'm treating the young fans well. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button upper right navigational bar. Folks, really appreciate everybody listening.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.